the 2016 USA Olympic team, because
right. They
were really good, but the 2012 squad was like LeBron.
That was Carmelo. The second dream team.
It was the second. Yes, it was. I think it was a top three Olympic team of all time, along with 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, 1992 was just, you know, all three of those are kind of the creme de la creme.
Yeah.
And then 2016, it was like, yeah, but I mean, even me, like a staunch basketball fan, I wasn't checking it out. But this is just for FIBA. So for those thinking that this Team USA, I think a lot of people have the misconception that this is all preparing for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just the FIBA World Cup team.
Right.
And essentially, you can just call it the Boston Celtics it's just the Boston Celtics at this point with the guys they have on it. Now, De'Aaron Fox was going to make the roster.
Right.
He's one of those guys that last year he had a magnificent season, 18 points and 7 assists for a Kings team that wildly outperformed expectation. So to me, it shows that it was just another jump in the trajectory that makes De'Aaron Fox on the path that Bill Simmons of The Ringer,
mm-hmm.
Formerly of ESPN, said that he believes in 5 years from now that De'Aaron Fox will be the best point guard in the NBA. And I don't think that's necessarily far off, because I think De'Aaron Fox is a magnificent basketball player. But it kind of makes me wonder how important it is to play in the actual tournament compared to just the experience playing against Jason Tatum, playing against Kemba Walker, playing against Donovan Mitchell, where you're getting the experience of playing guys and getting coached by Greg Popovich
right. And
some of these other guys on the staff. That was more beneficial than the actual tournament
right, more
itself.
So like the practicing, just being around other people who are winning, other young guys that have that same mindset as you. And like, I think the biggest thing, honestly, is getting to be coached by Pop.
Yeah.
Like that's huge. That would be like for an NFL player to be able to go get coached by Belichick for 2-3 months.
Yeah. Like some young offensive mm-hmm. guard going against Aaron Donald and learning from Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
You're going to come back the next season better than you were before.
Right. Because you're going to be playing teams who are far less talented than you generally. So that's not as much. And maybe the guys, you think it's them fear of getting hurt?
I think some of it.
Part of it?
I think that is part of it. And the other part is that they've gained enough to where they can come bring that back to the team that's paying them millions of dollars.
Right.
And saying, like, here's my improvement. Like, his teammate Marvin Bagley is a guy that dropped out early after a couple of these scrimmages and practices. Harrison Barnes is still on this team, a Sacramento King. I think that a lot of this is an opportunity for them to get better. And honestly, I think the biggest winners out of the Team USA select so far have been the Boston Celtics. Because not only are they getting coached by Greg Popovich, you have your core four players all still on the team. And this is an early chemistry bonding moment, especially for a team that was a complete 180 just a couple months ago with Kyrie Irving, who was the opposite of that team leader and a guy that wanted to bring everybody together. This team now has Kemba Walker,
mm-hmm.
Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Marcus Smart all on the team. And they're becoming bros and better teammates right now. Let me go through the roster.
Yeah. Because it's a 12-man roster that you have for the FIBA World Cup.
And there are 13 players left. So, you know, one of these guys is going to be left off. And I think it's down to three. And I'll mm-hmm. give you my opinion on that. The guards are Kemba Walker, Chris Middleton, Donovan Mitchell, Marcus Smart, Joe Harris, and Derek White. Forwards are Harrison Barnes, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Kyle Kuzma. And the big men are Brooke Lopez, Miles Turner, and Mason Plumlee. Obviously missing Bam Adebayo, who was a part of the selection process and was one of only two players to actually get cut, not withdraw, not accept an invite.
Right.
He was actually cut, which I think could be a mistake, but Bam was also a guy that was a big winner
mm-hmm.
from this, because Bam got to show off his ball handling, his blocking ability, his shooting ability, and he did get that opportunity with everyone else.
Yeah.
So even though these are a couple cats that are off it, they gained a lot of experience.
Right, just to be able to be in that mode, in around all of these guys, and again, having Popovich around you, and it gives you a chance to almost kind of show yourself off, because we know how the NBA works. People like, the guys like to get into cliques, and then they like to join forces like superheroes. So this is a chance for a lot of young guys to show off in front of other young guys and, you know, if you got chemistry with someone, it's like, hey, what's going on in 2 years? You never know.
So what Avengers is this? If this is like the superhero, what level of the Avenger movie series is this? I didn't watch Avengers. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, how dare
but
you.
I know. I'm a pariah of society because of it. Man. But I think it's funny to think of it that way. It's I think it's going to come down to Marcus Smart, Joe Harris, Derek White, because Chris Middleton can kind of play forward and guard. So you have Kemba Walker and Donovan Mitchell for sure, and then Chris Middleton as a guard. So that's three. And then you're probably going to keep another guard to have three true guards, Chris Middleton as a guard forward. So it really leaves Smart, Harris, and Derek White as one of the three. Derek White's a pop guy. He plays for the Spurs. Popovich is the head coach. Joe Harris is supposed to be the three-point shooter, Marcus Smart. I think it'll probably come down to Joe Harris off that team. So looking at this squad, everybody online makes fun of it.
It doesn't blow you away, to say the least.
But it's full of great play. It's full of like all-star. You've got Kemba Walker, Chris Middleton, Donovan Mitchell, all-star guys. You've got the future and Tatum and Brown and Kuzma. I mean, they're still the favorites, right?
Yes.
Isn't that crazy? This is literally the C-plus squad of NBA and American basketball, and it's like, it's still better than every other country.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, they're still going to be the favorites. Now, there could be an upset. These guys could get hurt. You don't want, knock on wood, want that.
Whoa.
It could happen.
I mean, it could.
That's really the only way that they would not be the favorites. What I'm saying is it would take injuries.
Oh, okay.
But to the casual fan who would look at this and say, wait, this is Team USA. Where's the LeBrons? Where's the Kevin Durants? Where's the Kyrie Irvings? Why aren't they in here?
Speaking of Kevin Durant being hurt, that's why he's not in
Well, here. I'm just saying.
I know what you're saying. It's the FIBA. If it's the Olympics, you're probably going to get some higher talent in there because it's better for their profile, better for the connections they make, the people they meet. But it'll be really – this is a weird sign for the way that it's going to go for the Olympics in 2020.
Yeah, because you wonder, is the trend going to go this way where anyone that's over the age of 28, they're just going to be like, not doing it. Kind of like home run derby in baseball.
Exactly.
Where they're like, I'm going to go home. I have my routine that I do every offseason. I got to be with my family. Then I meet with my trainer. Then we go do our thing. This could throw a huge wrench in it.
It's almost like the pendulum swinging back and forth. 92 and 96, the teams were loaded. It kind of flipped back around 04, where it's just you had a couple stars, but the rest of it was just like younger guys that weren't established. And then it swung back because it was cool to be on the Olympic team. They needed people on the Olympic team. And now that it's solidified again as the great, it's swinging back. Mm-hmm. But one guy that won't be on the 2020 Olympic team in other BBN news.
Yeah.
DeMarcus Cousins tore his ACL.
You hate, that's one of those stories, when I saw it come across Twitter, it makes your stomach drop when you see it. It's just the terrible luck to have a quad, an Achilles, and the ACL. That's like the three, that's like the Bermuda Triangle of injuries.
It
especially
is.
For anyone. It doesn't even have to be a big man like him.
Right, but being a big man doesn't help.
Oh, no.
And it reminds me a lot. First off, it's just the worst case scenario for DeMarcus Cousins because you're on the Kings, you're going to get if they keep you, you're getting the Supermax deal or whatever it is. You're making $220 million or whatever. You get traded to New Orleans and you're in the perfect spot. You want to keep Anthony Davis, you got to keep DeMarcus Cousins. And for the first 3 or 4 months of that season, he was averaging 26 points, 13 rebounds, and 5.9 assists. Can you name the other players in NBA history that have ever done that?
Mm-mm.
Well, it's because you can't, because no one has ever done that before.
Spoiler.
No one has ever averaged that for a full season, which was what DeMarcus Cousins was doing with the New Orleans Pelicans in 2017-2018. And then he ruptured his Achilles. Then he signs that prove-it deal with the Warriors, and he's coming back, looking good sometimes, other times, we'll see about it. Tears his quad 2 games into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Comes back for the Warriors, which is a, no pun intended, a real warrior move of a guy. And then signs with the Lakers. This happens. It's literally the worst case scenario. It reminds me a lot of another Coach Calipari player.
And who's that?
Derrick Rose.
Mm.
It reminds me a lot of different. They were different ages, but it's the same thing. You're on this like peak of your career. Derrick Rose was the MVP of the season, and DeMarcus Cousins was playing the absolute best at a level that no one has ever played before. Not Wilt Chamberlain, not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, not Michael Jordan. He is playing at that level, and then the injuries one on top of the other in seasons like this. You will not see DeMarcus Cousins until most likely 2020 season. And by that time, you're hitting 30 and you've lost you've lost essentially two and a half years of your career right in the middle of your prime. Now, you hate to see it.
Yeah, you could look at this in one of two ways. You could say that he is 30 and he's lost 2 years, but that also means he doesn't have 2 years worth of grind on his body. But they've said
that's a pretty bad grind that he has on there right now.
Exactly. They try to make that with running backs in the NFL. Like, well, he was hurt for a year. He was suspended, so he doesn't have that. But it's not like he was just sitting out for those 2 years. So what do you honestly think the future is for Boogie?
It's bleak.
He will get signed by someone more than likely. Do you think he's done? Or do you think he'll just come back, maybe be a sixth man to just kind of...
I think it's a little Bill Walton on the Celtics-ish, kind of like what he was supposed to be for the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, what I'd like to see, and BBN has talked about it ad nauseum, about wanting to see Wall and Cousins play together. And I think Wall comes back next year. He's not going to come back this year. He will be back next year.
Mm-hmm.
So he returns in 2021. Who knows what's going to happen with Bradley Beal? They're already kind of a dumpster fire in a lot of ways. Sign Cousins and just have Wall and Cousins for a year. I think everybody kind of wants to see that. I had a lot of faith that this year for the Los Angeles Lakers, DeMarcus Cousins was going to be a major impact player.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when I mean major, I mean I thought that he was going to recover fully and he was going to be a guy that can put up 20 and 10 in the playoff. So for them to lose him... One, I don't know if he'll ever get back to that level after this.
Yeah.
Because
it's hard enough to get back to the level after an Achilles or a torn quad or an ACL. But then you have all three of these in a matter of 3 years or less.
And it's just rough to see because you have to wonder whether rushing back from that quad injury.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Achilles. I think he came back in the proper time. It was the quad injury that if the way his weight distribution on his legs from trying to compensate from it, he didn't know how to do that. And it resulted in the knee. It could have been a fluke thing, but when you have those two injuries and then this, it doesn't seem like a fluke. It seems like a really, really dark path that it's winding down. It hurts. It hurts the Lakers. It hurts, countless other situations. But most of all, it hurts DeMarcus Cousins, and it's really sad to see.
Yeah. We are going to transition now to some college football. It is going to be here before we know it. Speaking of that, the Cats' first game going to be the less than 2 weeks away at home against Toledo. But we are going to get in to our top 10 college football players for the 2019-2020 season.
And I'm excited about this, baby.
I was making this list, and my heart is breaking.
We have such me and you just have really different opinions when it comes to rankings, even though our sports minds are kind of similar. So I'm really excited to see what we can disagree on now.
This will be we will get into that next. It's Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5.
It's Jimmy and Angelo bringing you the most hashtag lit show in Central Kentucky. I read that on the internet, so it must be true. Yeah. This is ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5.
This sound like some 4301.
This is Jimmy and Angelo. Give us a call at 381-1313 or tweet us at ESPN Radio Lex. Now here's Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5.
Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. We are talking some college football. Call us up, 381-1313 is our number.
Finally!
It's finally
here. Some college football.
Tweet us at Jimmy and Angelo on Twitter. So we've got our top 10 college football player list for the 2019-2020 season. We will go 10 through 6 now, and then we'll come back and do 5 through 1. So we will kind of flip-flop. I'll do 10, you'll do 10, 9, 9, get it like that. That makes
sure.
sense?
Yeah, and I want to give it a couple apologies to some guys.
Man, this is tough.
It is very tough. Ugh. We left off the list. My number one guy I want to apologize to is DeAndre Swift. Mm-hmm. If you watched him against Kentucky last year, he's maybe the most special running back in college football. But with the some other guys that are there, I don't know if you can say he's, like, quote-unquote, the best. But I think pound-for-pound talent-wise, he is. Justin Herbert of Oregon, he was the top Pac-12 player, but there were not a lot of Pac-12 pickings this year.
He's got a cannon for
he
an
does.
Arm.
Speaking of the Pac-12, Laviska Shenault, I actually saw live the best game of his career, not in person, but live on TV, the best game of his career against Nebraska last year. He's going to be a problem. He only played 9 games, still put up 1,000 yards. So you'll like that out of a receiver. A couple of defenders. Grant Delpit of LSU. He's going to be the next great LSU DB. Dylan Moses of Alabama. He was a Bednarik Award finalist. And A.J. Epinesa of Iowa is one of the best defensive ends and top defensive end prospect in college football. So with apologies to them, we are going to kick off our top 10 list.
Those were the honorable mentions.
Honorable mentions. Yeah. Number 10, Rondale Moore. And people around here be like, Rondale Moore, man, that name sounds kind of familiar.
Yeah.
It's because he played high school football at Trinity in Louisville. And the thing is, he is good. Not just good, he is great. Because Rondale Moore had 135 touches, 1,471 yards, and 14 touchdowns on offense last year. And that doesn't even include 700-plus return yards.
That's pretty good.
And he was a true freshman.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
Some would say.
He was Big Ten Freshman of the Year, and he's really on the radar with a lot of people. So Rondale Moore kicks off as my number 10 player, and a hashtag Kentucky Proud. Hashtag Kentucky Proud.
My number 10 player, this might throw you for a loop, but I really, really like this guy. He's a sleeper. Quarterback Mason Fine from North Texas.
What?
Did you know that he is the current leader in passing yards in the NCAA right now?
I can admit I'm a man that I did not know that.
So he's short. He's 5'11", so that could hinder him as far as the draft. Mm-hmm. 2017, he threw for 3,700 yards, 27 touchdowns. I'm sorry, 2018, he threw for 3,700 yards, 27 touchdowns. And in 2017, threw for over 4,000 yards and 31 touchdowns. He plays for a North Texas team who loves to air it out, and I think he's a guy that people need to watch for this year. There's always a sneaky quarterback. He's not in the SEC. He's not in the ACC. Just watch for him.
He
Mason
sounds
Fine,
pretty good.
The North Texas Mean Green.
I will give you a little preview. He is not going to be the highest non-Power 5 quarterback on our list.
Whoa, hashtag teaser.
Hashtag.
All right, who you got for number 9?
Number 9. This is for our Ohio State fans out here, and it kind of makes me upset to say it, but it's just real. Chase Young of Ohio State. He's a defensive end. He is a pass rusher, and who a lot of people believe, as I left A.J. Epinesa off of the list from Iowa, he's more of a complete, well-rounded end. Chase Young is almost a literal demon off the edge. He had 9.5 sacks last year and 14.5 tackles for loss, and he is a guy that, especially Todd McShay, who spends a lot of time at Ohio State, says that this guy is next. And when you kind of are wondering who's going to be the... Do you remember when Jadeveon Clowney against Michigan knocked that kid's helmet off his head, and it was like, whoa! What is this?
The best play of any sport ever?
Yeah. I think you're right. This might be that guy to provide that highlight for this year. If Ohio State is going to make the playoffs, they need an All-American season from him, and I think he has the talent to do it. So Chase Young of Ohio State comes in at number 9.
When are we going to start calling Ohio State pass rusher U? Because Clemson's wide receiver U, LSU is DBU. In Ohio State, they've had the Bosa brothers. Chase Young.
That's true. Like, I mean, Sam Hubbard of the Cincinnati Bengals. Yeah. They do produce it. We need to start that. We need to. I don't know if we'll start it, but we'll definitely have a list show of our top 5 DEUs.
Yeah. Okay, so my number 9 is another quarterback, and this is a guy that I went back and forth whether or not to put him in there. Jalen Hurts, quarterback for Oklahoma. We know the story. Quarterback for Alabama. But then he was benched for Tua. So now he transfers to Oklahoma, and in 2016, he had 2,700 yards, 23 touchdowns. But in 2015, he threw for 17 touchdowns, only one interception. So he's proven that he can do it on a big level, and he's got a pretty good receiver he's throwing to that I will mention later in my top 10. So I think he's...
Oh, no, really? Mm. Okay, I see where you're going there. That's going to be really, really interesting. We'll talk about Jalen Hurts more in a little bit.
Okay.
Number eight for me is Tristan Wirfs. And you're like, who the heck is Tristan Wirfs?
What is a Wirf?
He is a junior at Iowa. He is an offensive lineman. And Iowa is kind of OLU, Offensive Lineman University. Mm-hmm. And just to give you an idea of who this guy is, he broke the school record for power clean, four reps of 450 pounds of a power clean.
I didn't think bars could take that for a power clean.
I didn't think human bodies could take that. And he did one of them, and he did four, which broke the school record. And he had a 35-inch vertical to go along with that, which would have been the second highest at the NFL Combine in the last 7 years. He is a former state champion wrestler, and he was named the number one freak athlete, according to, I'm not going to reveal the source. You can look it up yourself. Yeah. But he was the number one freak athlete in college football, according to one list. The guy is presumed, along with, apologies to Walker Little of Stanford and Andrew Thomas of Georgia. Mm-hmm. He is kind of considered coming in the top offensive lineman of in college football this season. I will say this. As much as we like to hate Tennessee around here, Trey Smith of Tennessee was the number one overall recruit at offensive tackle. But in the nation, he's a Tennessee player. He would be on this list in the top five if it wasn't for blood clots in his lungs. So, we just hopefully he's healthy first. They don't know if he's going to play this year, but if we knew he was playing this year, he would be in my top five.
Yeah. I can't wrap my brain around a 35-inch vertical. He's 6'5", 320, and he can power clean 450 five times.
Absolutely. There's the lineman love on the list. Athletic freak.
Jeez. All right, my number eight is going to be the guy that I just talked about, Jalen Hurts, the guy he's throwing to, CeeDee Lamb, wide receiver at Oklahoma. He can now step into the spotlight role now that Hollywood Brown is in the NFL, and he has a quarterback now with Jalen Hurts who's going to take over where I just blanked on his name. Kyler Murray,
yes.
I was like, whoa,
who's that guy?
Yeah, the guy in the NFL now. So I think CeeDee Lamb, he's going to be a big-time player this year, and he's got another good quarterback. Now, CeeDee Brown is why Jalen Hurts, for me, is in the top 10. They complement each other.
I think CeeDee Lamb has, even though Hollywood Brown went in the first round, since his freshman year, I think CeeDee Lamb's been the best receiver.
All-around receiver. Hollywood Brown was like the explosive guy.
But CeeDee's just as fast. I don't have CeeDee Lamb in my top 10, and I didn't put him on my honorable mention. That shows how good he is, because I have no qualms with him being on your list. I think he is that good.
Stud.
So, completely agree.
Who you got for number seven?
I have who I believe is the highest non-Power 5 player on our list, De'Eriq King of Houston. This guy is going to be a Heisman finalist. He is a 5 foot. He's like Mason Fine, 5'11", 185 pounds. He profiles more of a running back, but don't let that fool you, because last year he only had 2,900 passing yards, 36 passing touchdowns to 6 interceptions, but he also chipped in 674 rushing yards and 14 rushing touchdowns. So this is a guy that had 50 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. He's going into his senior year, and Houston just poached former West Virginia University head coach Dana Holgorsen.
Houston, it doesn't seem like we have a problem.
It doesn't seem like we have a problem at all. This is a team under Holgorsen who loves to air out the ball, who's not going to be afraid to use King's legs. They are going to be one of the most explosive offenses in college football, a team that I think could make a New Year's Day bowl under this head coach quarterback combination. And I think this guy, when it's all said and done, is going to be sitting at Radio City in the Heisman row.
Whoa. From Houston. Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 92.5. Going over our college football players top 10 list, my number seven is, I believe, my only big boy on this list, Auburn defensive lineman De'Eriq Brown. Mm. He's a defensive tackle. He had 48 tackles, 10.5 sacks, 4.5 tackles for loss last season. And it was tough. I had Chase Young on this list, Raekwon Davis from Alabama, who's also a monster. But De'Eriq Brown, he's a stud, and he's going to fill the middle of the field.
He's the Tristan Wirfs of defensive linemen.
Yeah, he's a freak.
Year, an athletic specimen.
As I was diving in all of these guys, that's why in the beginning we were saying this is such a tough list to make. There are monsters in college football this year.
And it's tough because in my apologies to, I should have just put every SEC defender.
Yeah.
Because there's so many great SEC defenders. For me, that's what makes it so hard to put a top 10 list, because I can make a top 10 SEC defender list and put it up against anybody's top 10 player list.
Yeah.
That's how loaded the SEC is at defense this year and every year.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, like you said, you named Raekwon Davis, you named Derrick Brown, Dylan Moses was a guy, Grant Delpit, and right there we've got four SEC defenders that we even considered for the top 10 players in all of college football.
Yeah. It's stacked. So who you got for number six?
My number six player, before we head to the top five, Jake Fromm of Georgia. He only comes in at number six, which a lot of people say, you know, you got to wait for the top five, baby. All right, then you'll see why. But Jake Fromm, here's a little interesting stat, because at first I was like, man, I don't know if I want to put him in my top 10. And then I started thinking, I even texted that to you. I said, I might leave Jake Fromm out. And then I just, in the back of my mind, I said, I'm pretty sure he plays his best in big games. And I wasn't wrong.
Yeah.
And not only does he play his best in big games throughout his career, he's 24-3 when touchdown to interception ratio is equal or better than 1-to-1. So anytime he throws, like, let's say one touchdown, one interception, two touchdowns, one interception, you know, 3-3 or what, however combination, he's 24-3. But the Georgia Bulldogs are 0-2 when it's under. So if he throws one touchdown, two interceptions, two touchdowns, three interceptions, they are 0-2. But he's had 15 games with one touchdown or more with zero interceptions. And you can guess their record in that game.
Pretty good.
15-0.
Yeah, that would
make sense. So this guy, in the words of Skip Bayless, he is a gamer. He's a shot caller and a playmaker.
But is he a big baller and a shot caller?
He is. He's the second best big game quarterback in college football.
I mean, he had a guy, Justin Fields, behind him that was supposed to be very good, and he so much so that Justin Fields transferred.
He kicked out Jacob Eason for the starting job, who was the top quarterback prospect of his class.
Yeah.
He's going to Washington, and he might be better than Justin Herbert, who's the best player in the Pac-12. That's how good Fromm is that he's kicked off two top-ranked quarterbacks out of Georgia because of how good he is. He's definitely a big-time player.
Boom. My number six guy to close off this part of the list for us is Clemson running back Travis Etienne.
My hardest guy to cut from
this
the list.
This dude is fast. He makes fast people look not fast. He had 24 touchdowns last year, most in Division I college football. He also had 1,658 yards, and he bulked up this offseason.
8.1 yards per carry.
8.1 yards a carry. Not like he had 55 carries. This dude had 1,600 yards, almost 1,700. And the more I looked at this list, I could have, how you just said, a top 10 list of SEC defenders. I wanted to put everyone for Clemson.
There's like so many good
players at Clemson.
If Trevor Lawrence
doesn't win the Heisman Trophy this year, I don't know what's happening. He has so many weapons.
It was hard not to just make a Clemson and Alabama football player list. Travis Etienne, the only reason why, I will give you one thing.
Okay.
The only reason why I didn't put him in my top 10 was because of a regression model. How can you keep this up two straight years with all the talent? This is the best players for 2019, not the best players of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So looking, projecting forward, he's a guy as good as he is. I can see kind of a drop-off. And by the way, those who are high school football fans, which listen to Varsity Game Night on Friday night, 7:30, we are going to have Brian Station at Frederick Douglass, me, Josh Toffness, on the play. And if you watched high school football here, he reminds me like DeMarco Fishback, who was the top player in the city. Like he had 22 touchdowns last year, and it reminded me a lot of Etienne. When I saw Etienne, I was like, hey, those two guys, That's how good this, by the way, guys, this was our 6 through 10.
Yeah, we've still got the top of the top players coming up. So we will get into list numbers 5 through 1 next. It's Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 92.5. You are now rapping, with 50 Cent.
You gotta love it, And 92.5.
It's ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5. Jimmy and Angelo, we are back with you. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, @JimmyandAngelo. Our phone number is 381-1313. We are continuing our top 10 college football player list for 2019-2020. And this it is loaded with talent. I'll just say that. This was a very tough list to make. So we just went from 10 to 6. We're going to cap it off with our 5 through 1 best players. Angelo.
And Alabama fans hope that they don't want you back on this player. So my number 5 player is Jalen Hurts.
Oh.
And Jalen Hurts is a guy that I thought should have replaced Tua at the end of the year. When the Georgia game happened and Jalen Hurts came in for an injured Tua, he sparked the offense, led him to a victory, and Tua played great against Oklahoma. Tua had a magnificent game against Oklahoma. But in that national championship game against Clemson, it was very easy to tell early on Tua was not the guy for that game. And if you're willing to bench Jalen Hurts at a halftime for Tua, you should have been willing. I think that is Nick Saban's greatest coaching loss. Mm. His biggest error in the history of his coaching is that.
But because, it also shows where they stand with Tua as opposed to Jalen.
I know, but that's that exactly, and that's the fault. Mm-hmm. You were willing to bench Jalen,
right,
but not willing to bring him back in. I think Jalen Hurts was completely in the right. I thought Alabama deserved to lose that national title because of that decision. Now, why he is in my top five this year? Because of Lincoln Riley and what that guy can do. Jalen Hurts is an absolute gamer. Like you said earlier, 17 touchdowns, one interception. He was 25-2 as a starting quarterback, and then he gets benched. He is coming into this year as a guy with something to prove, even though he's already proven stuff, you know, in his past. I mean, you know, it's tough to lose a national title as a starter and then get benched in a title win. So there's probably a part of him that wants to be the man all the way through a national title win. He's made big plays all throughout his career. The Georgia game's an example against Clemson before Deshaun Watson stormed down the field. He had a Vince Young-esque run for a touchdown in that national title game. I believe in Jalen Hurts the person, and I believe in Jalen Hurts the talent. And you saw what Lincoln Riley did with Baker Mayfield for 3 years and then did with Kyler Murray. I expect him, maybe not the same heights as those guys, but I think that he is going to be a top player in the nation, and I think Oklahoma is in a prime position to make a run at a national title because they got Jalen Hurts.
And you know how the universe works, right? You know how the college football playoff is going to slate out? There will be an Oklahoma-Alabama game.
There will be.
You know it will. Every year, like whenever there's these redemption stories, you watch. Mark my words.
It'll happen.
My number 5 is running back Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin. He is a beast. He is a monster. He averaged 7.2 yards a carry last year with over 2,000 rushing, basically 2,200 rushing yards. And now he is going to be really the big focal point of the offense. Their quarterback, Alex Hornibrook, is gone. So now it's just Jonathan Taylor. I mean, even still with that last year, it was still the Jonathan Taylor show. But this kid's a beast.
Can we say Alex's last name on the radio? Are we sure?
I think we can. It's just cleared.
No, it's he's my number 4, Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he's better than Etienne. Like the number, you obviously the juiced numbers of Etienne being in Clemson's offense, but it shows you how special you have to be as an offensive line unit. Wisconsin, I said Iowa's kind of offensive line you, but it's really Stanford, Wisconsin, Iowa, because of how good their lines are. But he averaged, I believe it was 6.8 the year before his freshman year, 7.2, like you said.
Yeah.
He's averaged 2,085 rushing yards a season in his college career. He has averaged 2,000 yards. The guy, when you go into every game and you know that's the guy you have to stop and you can't stop him, that's special enough for me to put him in the top 5. He's an early Heisman contender.
You can't do anything with him. I mean, when you average 7.2 yards a carry.
And it's crazy. Put 11 guys on. Yeah. Let him throw the ball at that point.
So you said he was your number 4
He's
guy?
He's my number 4.
Okay. So my number 4 guy is Alabama wide receiver Jerry Jeudy. He had 68 catches last year, 1,300 yards, 14 touchdowns, and he broke the record for single season yards and touchdowns for Alabama. And you know that they've had a couple pretty good wide receivers in the past. What's his name? Julio?
Amari Cooper?
Amari Cooper, Julio Jones.
Jones?
Yeah.
It seems pretty good.
He broke their records.
Yeah.
So
he's my number 3 player. Jerry.
See what we're doing here. We got a trend going.
We have something. It seems like the top of college football separated itself.
Yeah.
Even though the other guys were so good, these are the guys in college football. Jerry Jeudy is in my list, like you'll see here in a second. He's my best non-quarterback in college football. Jerry compares to another guy of a similar name, and that's Jerry Rice. And Ooh. That is a name you do not bring out.
No, it is
unless
not.
Unless it is someone that is truly, truly special. And that's the way I feel about Jerry Jeudy. Not only do I think he's the best receiver in the nation, everybody else did too, because he's the Biletnikoff Award winner from mm-hmm. last year. As a true sophomore, he was the Biletnikoff Award winner. He averaged 19.3 yards per catch, and a lot of that is with his route running and also the way he can shake and bake. The guy is truly... He's a little like Odell in the way that he can get open.
Yeah.
And when he gets the ball in his hands, he's like LeSean McCoy in his prime. He is the best receiver to not be Calvin Johnson or Julio Jones. The bigger right. ones, he's the best small receiver, I think, to come out possibly after this year since Jerry Rice.
Yeah.
He's that good.
It's Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio, 1300-925. We've got our top 10 college football players. My number three. Now, I almost flip-flopped these guys, but I have a reason for this. My number three is Clemson wide receiver T. Higgins.
What?
This is, I know.
What?
Hang on.
What?
Hang on. Now, like you just said about Jerry Jeudy, that he's the most talented. I think T. Higgins, the only reason I have him up here is because he broke out last year in a huge way. He's a big body receiver, and he's only above Jerry Jeudy because I think Trevor Lawrence is... head and shoulders, the best quarterback in college football right now. Now, T. Higgins does have Justin Ross across the field from him, which could take away some catches. But I just think talent-wise and breakout season this year, I think T. Higgins is going to be the guy. Now, it's a reach. I will give you that. You had your, but just hear me out here. I think T. Higgins will finish out this year with better numbers than Jerry Jeudy. And that is why I did that. It was tough to do it. Having him above the Biletnikoff winner. Now, as your blood pressure comes back down, thoughts? I see you keyboarding away over there. I don't think you
want them, sir. I do not think you want them. No, T. Higgins is one of the best receivers in college football.
Yeah.
I would not put him over anybody that you had on your list, even though I think he's top five. But you're going to take someone that was 936 yards last year, 12 touchdowns, admittedly.
But like you said, we're picking it for best players this year, not off of numbers last year. I think he's trending up. He was hurt in 2017, then he came back last year. And I just think Trevor Lawrence throwing the ball is going to be better than Tua, which is why, you know, I was going to put, do I put Jeudy and Tua or do I put Trevor and Higgins? So
I've known about T. Higgins for a long time. I've got some friends that live close to the Tennessee border. He mm-hmm. was from Oak Ridge, Tennessee. He's a great player.
Yeah,
he really is.
I had to take a reach here.
I don't think you had to put it against a guy that is in, because they're going to fight for touches at Clemson they already do at Alabama.
Yeah.
And look what Jerry Jeudy did at Alabama with all of the with Henry Ruggs, with Jaden, with the other guys that they have on the team, the Damian Harrises, the Najee Harrises in the backfield, even man, how am I blanking on these Alabama players? The Irv Smith Jr.
Yeah.
Like all those guys. And Jalen Waddle is his name. Waddle's the last name. That's such a weird last name for a receiver because you're so...
Waddling around the
field.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. When you're so fast and so skilled. I completely disagree that there's a huge gap in the best quarterbacks in college football. But I do agree that Tua is number two.
You have Tua at two?
I have two. You get it? Two. There we go.
Yeah.
He had seven touchdowns and four interceptions over his final three games. But in the SEC championship game and the national championship game, he had three touchdowns to four interceptions in those two games combined. Mm-hmm. He did not play well in the big games this year. And some of that was due to injury, but I think some of that was due just to his own playing ability.
Yeah.
But at the beginning of the year, the first seven games, he was on the greatest college quarterback of all time path. Like, that's how good he was on those first seven games. And it kind of came back down to earth a little bit the thicker you get into the SEC conference schedule. But mm-hmm. he was still really good until that Georgia game. And it's those big games that kind of scared me a little bit away from Tua to put him at number two.
Yeah.
He's not the rushing threat I think some of us thought he would be.
Right.
Coming to the college level. But, I mean, he's a mercurial passer.
He's able to move if he needs to.
Yeah, he's able to.
Yeah.
He's great. I don't think there's as big of a gap as you're saying. You could have a redemption season from Tua,
mm-hmm.
but I do think that he is number two.
Yeah, well, like I said, I have someone above him at quarterback. So I have Tua at second. He threw 4,000 yards and 43 touchdowns last year. Those are huge numbers. So it's going to be tough to exceed that, but it's what are you going to do?
And we both have Trevor Lawrence as the number one player in college football. A true sophomore, a guy that came in, after Kelly Bryant was benched and left, Trevor Lawrence, he did have that concussion scare against Syracuse, but he went undefeated. And just to put it in perspective, Tua had that drop-off where he had 7 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, you know, the 3 and 4, mm-hmm. like I said, in the 2 big games. Trevor Lawrence did the complete opposite. In his last 5 games, he had 1,436 yards, 11 touchdowns, 0 interceptions in his last 5 games. And in the 2 playoff games that he had, he was 6 touchdowns, 0 interceptions.
That's a big reason why I think there is that jump between the two of them. And just the eye test watching Tua and Lawrence, I just think Lawrence is a more fluid quarterback, thrower of the football, everything. The weapons he has is just not fair.
I think he resembles very closely to Peyton Manning in a lot of ways. And he is up there with Andrew Luck and mm-hmm. Peyton Manning as like the college football quarterbacks of that pro style mold. He's coming in. I think he has the opportunity to take over the sport.
Yeah. And he's doing that. I mean, when you've got the Justin Ross, the T. Higgins.
The T. Higgins?
Yeah. Did I mention T. Higgins yet?
Love T. Higgins.
That's fine that you hate him. I mean, it sounds like you do. You left him off your top.
Let's go to break.
Shout out to T. T, if you're there, tweet at me, at Jimmy and Angelo. When we come back, we're going to get you some quick hits. There was a lot that has happened in the world of sports the last week, including a huge knockout in the UFC last night. It's Jimmy and Angelo, ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Make sure you are following us on Twitter at Jimmy and Angelo. We are going to hit you now with some quick hits in the world of sports. On Saturday in the Little League World Series, the Bowling Green East Little League team was eliminated. Unfortunately, look, it's just cool that those kids got to go to the Little League World Series and have that experience, but they lost 6-1 to Rhode Island.
Kentucky has had a team represented in the Little League World Series 3 out of the last 5 years, and I think locally it's always very cool when you can be represented on a stage like that, especially one as pure as having just some kids out there wanting to have fun and win the big one.
Yeah.
And that's I always think that's really super cool. Always repping for the state. Hashtag Kentucky proud.
Kentucky proud.
There was a bit of a big deal in the NFL, but also some controversy that followed after it. The NFL has agreed to a partnership with Roc Nation. Mm-hmm. And if you're not familiar with Roc Nation, the rapper mogul Jay-Z owns that sports agency. Has some of your favorite players on there, like Kyrie Irving. He has signed Saquon Barkley and a couple of other major league baseball players like Robinson Cano. And the agreement was for a halftime show to improve the quality of the halftime show performance, to improve viewership quality overall in the NFL. And then it started touching on the social justice reform that the NFL has with the protesting. Jay-Z controversially said that we are past kneeling and said that since we all know the issue, we need to find a different way to promote that. Eric Reed, one of the biggest vocal activists of the kneeling protesting movement that was headlined by Colin Kaepernick, he has taken obliged to that. He's not appreciated the way that Jay-Z's stance is, especially speaking for a group that really wasn't asking for him to kind of chime in on that. Yeah. It's going to be a kind of a sticky situation, but overall the new deal should help with entertainment purposes, but let's just say it's not over yet. And I don't know, I'm hearing a weird rumor around the web that this is going to lead to an NFL ownership by Jay-Z.
Really?
It's just a rumor.
Okay.
And sometimes I like rumors.
Rumors are good. Last night in the UFC, there was a huge title bout in the heavyweight division. There was a rematch between Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic. And Stipe, spoiler alert, knocked him out in the 4th round.
That's unbelievable.
Huge. That's huge, which this could mean that there is going to be a third fight between the two of them. DC knocked him out last year. Miocic knocked him out last night. So what do they do? You can't be 1-1.
Got to have the grudge match.
Right.
So, I want it in Hell in a Cell, and I want Brock Lesnar to interfere.
Oh, wow.
That's how I want it to go. All yes. Right. Well, I know. That's the way I like my UFC. I'm not sorry.
I'll let Dana know that that's what Angelo would like. So
I appreciate that. I'm glad you have the connects. And last thing, you're talking about reinstatement after this last year. Josh Gordon has been reinstated by the NFL.
Huge.
And that is a huge move. I think in a way that Josh Gordon, I don't know if he'll ever come back to being the first team All-Pro receiver he was with the Cleveland Browns in his second year of his career.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a really good get for New England. For fantasy football owners, though, it kind of leaves a muddled wide receiver crew where you thought maybe N'Keal Harry would be a late round steal. Maybe Julian Edelman would be a wide receiver number two.
Yeah.
Now it's just the ball has so many places to spread around. I think Josh Gordon, along with a couple other Patriots receivers, they're more of just an overall late round flyers because you never know in that offense where it goes game to game.
Especially with Tom Brady, you don't know what he spreads it around so much. He never really has that favorite guy. And now that Gronk's gone, he was like his favorite-ish. But now it's just going to be who knows.
You don't know, but Josh Gordon is an amazing talent.
One of the best talents in the league when he's on the field. When we come back with Jimmy and Angelo, we are going to get into the MLB playoffs. The playoffs will be here before we know it. We're going to go down the wild card race. Do the Reds have a chance to make it? It's Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5.
This is Jimmy and Angelo. Give us a call at 381-1313 or tweet us at ESPN Radio Lex. Now here's Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5.
Yeah. Rusty girls everywhere. Hands in the air. So party over here. Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Our phone number is 381-1313. We are going to talk MLB playoffs. Call us up if you want to talk some Reds or just MLB playoffs in general. Tweet us at Jimmy and Angelo. Man, the NL wildcard picture, I mean, that's basically what we'll be talking about. The American League, it's sorting itself out, but
yeah, I'd rather talk about the American League because it's sorted out. The NL is so difficult. We're just talking about the quarter stretch. There's about 40 games left.
Right.
So we're on the last leg of what is the sturdiest chair in all of sports. I think that schedule does not break. It
Never.
Really does not.
And it just lasts all year.
All year long. And then when you know it, it's right around the corner. But it is getting to the fun part of baseball season where, like, you know, really it's the first three quarters of the season, like until now, where like I'll catch some games. I'll watch them with my grandpa. I will go and if there's like a cool matchup on Sunday Night Baseball, and I'm like, yeah, I don't have anything else to do. Yeah, let's watch. I'll watch, you know, my team.
Yeah, listen to A-Rod.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. I love A-Rod though. I'm not gonna lie. Let A-Rod live.
Yeah.
But it's now that where I'm like going out of my way to catch games because everything is so thick. Now, let's just start on the AL just because it's the easiest one to talk about. It's the one with the most decision. There's only four teams in the wild card picture really. It's Cleveland, Tampa Bay, and Oakland are all within a game of a half of each other. Cleveland is right now one game above Tampa Bay for the home field advantage in the wild card, and the A's are only half game away from replacing Tampa as the second wild card team. The Boston Red Sox are 6.5 games out of the second wild card spot in the AL, and all the other teams are 11.5 games back or further. Not saying that those teams can't make a push, but right now they are not in the picture. So it's kind of down to them, which baseball is one of the trickiest sports because the Boston Red Sox arguably had one of the best baseball teams in MLB history last year. I would say a top 15 team ever.
Yeah.
With the way that their record was and the destruction they did to the Astros and Dodgers in back-to-back series was really, really unexpected.
Unprecedented.
Unprecedented. That's what I was going to say, but I was like, oh, I don't know. Maybe it has happened before. But that's how that playoff picture looks. And honestly, right now, the Twins, who have been leading the Central almost all year long, are starting to sputter out. It's kind of like the tortoise and the hare, where they're, you know, it's just starting to slow down just a little bit, and that tortoise is coming back. But it's the Yankees. Three of the favorites for the World Series are in this, are in the AL. The Yankees, Astros, and Twins. The Yankees are 41 games above 500.
Pretty good.
Pretty good. They have a 99.9% chance to make the playoffs. They are one of only four teams to have a run differential above 140.
Yeah.
And that's the Yankees, Astros, and Twins. And we'll get to the other team here in a second. But that, like you said, the playoff picture there is clear. The Yankees are going to win the division. The Astros are going to win their division, most likely, unless they collapse in the Athletics, because the Athletics are only 6.5 back of the Astros in the West.
They're making a push.
They are making a push, and then the wild card race will be fun, really, between the loser of Minnesota and Cleveland in the Central, and then most likely the Athletics. But Tampa Bay is sneaky good. Tampa Bay's given up the least amount of runs in the American League this year, so that'll be fun to see where like the Rays fall in there. And but it's going to be a really fun and exciting playoff for the AL.
Mm-hmm.
But the wild card race and stuff, it's kind of sorting itself out
for the American League.
Do you want to talk about the National League?
So we can just kind of try to dive into this as much as we can. So there are, let me see, 8 teams in the National League wildcard race that are within 6.5 games. 8 teams. And the Reds are that last team that are 6.5 back. So this is just going to be a whole mess finishing out the rest of the year. To have 8 teams with a legitimate chance, not, you know, 11.5 or 13 back, 14 back. No, this is 6.5 games back with a lot of division games left to go for the National League wildcard race. So you've got the Dodgers, who have locked up their, they're the Yankees of the National League. They've locked it up. There's no chance. Their run differential is 60 runs better than the Yankees. Their run differential is 212.
So that's the other one. The only team in Major League Baseball above 200 in run differential. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
that's unreal. It doesn't look like real numbers, because you look at the Braves, who have a pretty good record. They're 20 games over 500. Their run differential is only 60.
That's insane. It is absolutely insane. Tampa Bay, who's not even that's slotted for the second wild card spot, is plus 101 in the AL. Just for comparison, the second ranked team in Major League Baseball is Houston with plus 175.
Yeah.
That's how dominant the Dodgers have been this year.
Looking at the wild card race, you've got the Nationals and the Cubs. They are the two teams right now. Nationals have home field advantage. The Brewers and Phillies are both one game back. And then you have the Mets and Giants at 2 and 2.5 respectively behind them. So there's no favorite right now. What do you think the Reds' chances are? Because I know that's what a lot of people are wanting to hear.
Yeah, and to speak on the Central, even though the Cubs are slated there, they are tied with St. Louis as the Central Division leaders right now. But the win percentage is just like a tick different to where St. Louis is in the top spot. Milwaukee's one game back of the division, and Cincinnati is 6.5 back.
That's really the division that's going to decide all of this, is the Central. Because the Pirates are 13.5 back, so you could say they're pretty much out. But
the Reds are only 4-6 in their last 10 games. Mm-hmm. They do have a plus 23 run differential, which is just, at this point of the season, that's pretty much 500 ball. According to ESPN in the playoff percentage, in the NL, the Cardinals 45% chance to make the playoffs, Cubs 71.8, Brewers 32.6, And that just 5.5 games from the Brewers, it drops from 32.6 to 3.2% chance.
For the Reds. Mm.
But I would say never say never. The Reds can get hot. Their pitching staff has really been on point as of late. They have the bats to do it. You know, at one point they were the best offensive team after the All-Star break in Major League Baseball. I'm not even going to say I can't see it, because I can't see anything in this muddied water of this playoff picture. I mean, I just don't have any words for it, just because it is 40 games back. Usually you have a pretty good idea. And when you say that in the wild card race, that Colorado is third from last in the National League. Only the Marlins and Pirates are worse, and they are 9 games back
of
a wild card
spot. Is still not completely out of it. I mean, the chances is probably very low, but to be single digits out of the wild card with a lot of divisional games left, you never know. I think my Giants, they're 2.5 games back, so I've got to toot their horn. I think they have a chance to make a run. They've done this 3 times before in the past when they went on World Series runs. They've got Johnny Cueto, who's coming back, who's been hurt for most of the year. They've got Madison Bumgarner. They've got Jeff Samardzija that they're riding. They've got a guy named Scooter Gennett, who is going to be pretty good offensively for them to finish out the year, I think. So I'm excited for it. Like we said in the beginning, baseball is one of those like monotonous seasons where it just seems like, oh, it's April again. Cool, they're starting 157 more games. And then you turn around and it's like, oh, wow. So for the casual fan who hasn't been paying much attention to baseball, when you really look at these standings, this is when it starts to get fun. Because baseball for a lot of times can just be, oh, why do you watch baseball? It's boring. Yeah, it's America's game. Not when it gets to this. This is from now until October is when it's good.
Do you want me you don't want me to give you the playoff percentage chance according to ESPN for the Giants, right?
I don't care what the percentages say. The 3 years they won the World Series, you want to know what they were? Probably zero.
It's the guts and the heart of the team.
Yes, they've done it 3 times. So I don't really.
I guess I'll leave you with this just for a second. The Giants have a 4.6 chance.
4.6 chance. Okay, so the Giants are at a 4.6% chance to make the playoffs, and the Reds are at a 3-point-something% chance. But what it really comes down to this time of year is pitching, which is why I think, to me, I'm just going to be a homer for a second. The Giants have, like I said, Bumgarner, they've got Samardzija, and they've got Cueto. Cueto has been hurt for most of the year, so I think they're going to make the push, and that is where the Dodgers have really fell off. Yes, their run differential right now during the regular season is 212, but in the playoffs, they have fallen off. So I think, I don't care what the 4% chance is, I'm going to get off my Giants train now, but I do think the Giants will make the wild card.
The Giants will make the wild card. So what team does that push back? We've got Atlanta's going to win the East.
Mm-hmm.
The Dodgers are going to win the West.
Yeah.
The Cubs are going to win the Central.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Well,
there we go.
There's a lot of people that are at this table, and there's only a few seats, but the Giants are going to kick the chair out from someone.
Well, I can hope is that the Cubs and Giants aren't the 2 wild card teams, because there might not be a show. After that.
Ooh, because you are a Cubs fan.
There, how long did it take you? I was trying to slide that in because you were like, you want to talk about the Reds, Angelo? And I was like, not really. I'd like to talk about my Chicago Cubs and why they have the third best home record and a pitiful away record, and why that we traded for Castellanos of the Tigers, and he has been fantastic. But why our bats aren't coming alive like they should, like the Dodgers. We should be right there with the Dodgers as the best lineup in all of baseball. Well, the Yankees do. I mean, they're pretty fantastic. Best team in baseball. But the Cubs just don't have that it that I'm looking for. And apparently Joe Maddon's job is on the line. So what I think is that when the favorites become the underdogs, that is when they uprise against the system. 2019 World Series, Cubs take it.
Really? That is a hot take of all hot takes. Don't get your hand too close to the stove with that one. You'll burn yourself. We're gonna transition now to a question that Angelo posed to me. The NFL salary cap. Should there be an actual salary cap, or should it go to more how we're talking about baseball, how baseball is with no salary cap? So we will get into that next. It's Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Tell you, stay inside
the lines. West, when I roll into the wild, wild west, when I stroll into the wild, wild west, when I bounce into the wild, wild west, it's going.
It's Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Make sure you follow us on the Twitter at Jimmy and Angelo. Give us a call, 381-1313. We are talking about the NFL salary cap and whether or not they should keep it. Should they turn it into the Wild Wild West. If there's no salary cap.
That was a Jimmy pick, by the way, and I love it. I love it. Wild Wild West.
We've got the poll on our Jimmy and Angelo Twitter page. Should there be a salary cap in the NFL, or should they rip it away and turn it into the Wild Wild West? So, Angelo, you posed this question to me. Where did this come from? Because have there really been talks that the NFL would take the salary cap away?
It's more of a topic of conversation online. Something that's generated a lot of discussion and buzz. And we actually have Steve on the line here that we'll bring him on in just a little bit. Because it is really interesting situation. Whenever it comes to the NFL, it is the most rigid cap structure of the three major sports. NBA has a soft cap. Major League Baseball has no cap. And then NFL has a hardline cap. Their cap is the minimum. For an example of a season, it's like $178 million, and their cap is $189. So they have $11 million to choose whether to spend or not, and that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
And, like, you cannot go over the salary cap. Like, you cannot go over it. You hit that number. So it causes issues when it comes to market value, when it comes to parity, when it comes to players' contracts. It has a lot of downfalls, as well as some benefits, I suppose, maybe for the ownership side more than the player side. So to get into it, I'll just say my side. I don't think salary caps in general kind of go against a market. They're able to kind of make a salary cap because it is kind of under the organizational umbrella of a unionized, like the MLB. I think they're called like nonprofit organizations, like the MLB and stuff. Yeah. But the teams within it can make the profit.
Right.
This and that and yada, yada.
A lot of legal jargon.
You're out here for legal jargon. We're here for sports. But no, the salary cap, to me, the points that I have on it, and we'll see how you feel about it. You may agree with me, you may not. We will see about it. But number one, no salary cap equals true market value for player contracts. So the one good thing about the current system is there is no, like in the NBA, you have a max contract,
right,
which means you have a certain amount of years and a certain amount of dollars you can make. Now, the NFL, I'm not certain with their years how that works, because it seems like a lot of guys kind of sign for that five-year range, a lot like the NBA. But in the NFL, there is no cap to how much money you can make. The market is always being reset at the top dollar, especially for quarterbacks and defensive players that you see, and even sometimes wide receivers, which Michael Thomas just set that current mark. So when it comes to the top of the top, they're still making that money, but it gets to the point where with that hard cap, you can't necessarily pour all the resources that you want to. For an example, when is a quarterback contract going to be too much? It's whenever the revenue comes and it starts limiting the salary cap. You start limiting how much you can spend per player, and then you're hampered by, let's say I'm owner X. I want to pay Aaron Rodgers this. I want to pay player X this. Like, let's say they wanted to pay Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams both $200 million contracts because that's how valuable they are to the Packers.
Yeah.
But with the hard cap, you can't do that because then you can't pay anybody else.
So is
that
fair?
Yeah. Is there a fairness to the players there? No, because it doesn't reflect the market value for those guys. So that's probably my first thing that I would bring up, is that with a salary cap, you don't get the true market for players.
Yeah. Well, I would say, I look at it this way. Back before 1994, there was no salary cap in the NFL. Now, granted, back then, they didn't bring in the revenue they do now, so it wasn't as big, just mostly because nothing back then. You didn't have the mediums that you do now. But you had a lot of dynasties, like the Cowboys, the Niners, the Steelers. And in the past 10 years, you've had 9 different Super Bowl winners. And I think you have that sort of variety in the teams that have excelled because you don't have the big time, like, for baseball, the Yankees. They have the huge salary cap, and then you had teams like the Marlins for so many years where it was just they didn't have a chance because players wanted to go to one team because they knew they could get that 10-year, $256 million contract that no one ever plays through. So I think I like that part of the NFL where you do have the variety of teams, and it almost is, it's an even scale across the board where players don't go to team up just to make that boatload of money that they really probably don't deserve, but they're going to get it because the market's there.
And well, some of that is because they didn't have free agency until 1994, not necessarily because of the salary cap, it's because player movement was allowed then.
Right.
And in a lot of ways, that has to has to do with it, because if you draft well and you don't have free agency, you just get to keep the same great players over and over again. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's necessarily because of the salary cap as it is because of free agency itself.
Yeah.
And if you look at it now, the Patriots, you know, you can semi say they have a dynasty, but it kind of goes to Major League Baseball and the English Premier League, the major soccer league over in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of those sports have a salary cap. And if you look at it, the Yankees haven't won a World Series since 2008.
Right. There, you know, for a while they had their run, but yeah.
You have the Cubs, the Astros, the Royals won a World Series. You had the Giants win their three World Series, and a lot of those teams aren't what you say is the major that major market. Even though they spend, it's just kind of up to the MLB team when they want to spend.
Right.
And in the English Premier League, I've had a conversation with a fellow, and he was saying that you get a lot of repeat winners from the major teams, your Man Cities, your Manchester United, your Chelsea's, but they have just as many different teams since 2013-14. They've had, I believe, four different champions as the NFL has had five different champions with the salary cap. So I'm not sure if parity gets into the difficulty as it does, because you see an example of other sports where that's not necessarily the case.
Right. Wonder what Steve has to say about this.
Let's see what Steve has so far. We got more points to make, but let's see what Steve has to say about everything so far. What's on your mind, Steve?
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to weigh in on a few things. If you get rid of the salary cap, the small market teams like the Packers, the Jaguars, and teams like that would suffer, because back in 94, like you were talking about, I'm a Cowboys fan, so I've kind of followed this real closely. Jerry Jones actually pushed for more revenue sharing, okay, because he knew that he had a great marketing thing with the Cowboys star. There's a lot of complicated things that are involved with that, but the free agency situation and then the fact that the NFL operates what I call a socialistic capitalistic system. They do revenue sharing, and regardless of who makes what, the Cowboys make account for 17% of the marketing for jerseys and other things like that, team related. It's still, Jerry pushed hard for the salary cap. I don't think that because he was such a mover and shaker and changed things in the NFL to such a great degree, it kind of, over the years, it kind of hurt Jerry's team.
Yeah.
And now this is a great example this year, where Stephen Jones said that we have a distribution dilemma. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to pay Zach and Z,
yeah,
and Amari Cooper the top dollar, but at the same time they're going to lose guys like Byron Jones and everything. And I want to say this. I don't have a lot of like for the Patriots organization, but you've got to respect what Brady did in building that team. When Tom Brady takes top dollar in the years of his contract, they don't go to the Super Bowl or they don't win the Super Bowl. But when Tom Brady takes his salary and says, okay, I'm going to take less money to get these better players around me, that's when the Patriots dynasty kicks in. Because all that money is shared amongst the players, and they get those, you know, good players there. They don't get top players. They've never had diva players except for Randy Moss. But that's the kind of situation that the salary cap generates for teams.
Well, let me say this about your points. My next point on the NFL salary cap was minimum salary floors for teams. So even if you don't have a salary cap, you can have a salary floor. Mm. And in the current collective bargaining agreement, the salary floor is much similar to the NBA's, as in it's pretty much about 90% or a little over that. At one point it was 89%, but last year, like I said, $178 million was the salary floor. You had to spend that much on your football team. I think that does more for the parity than having the salary cap, because that makes every team spend the money. Unlike in baseball, the problem you see in baseball is that the Marlins are spending $30 million on their payroll because they don't have a salary floor, while other teams are spending $150 million. And
yes, you're right. Yeah, the Marlins disbanded their team after they won the World Series.
Right.
It was a real kind of I would call it a dichotomy, because you get stuck with having to pay all these big salaries, and this, like I say again, the small market teams benefit from the revenue sharing in the NFL. I think with the salary cap going up every year, and it'll go up again next year, okay, because of all the TV contracts and the merchandising that the NFL generates, because they generate more money.
Oh yeah.
Than any sport. So I think, in my opinion, if I wanted my team to win, I would say no salary cap. Okay, I would say no salary cap. Spend
right.
as much as you can, and that would make the Joneses and the Maras and the Giants, the Eagles, all those bigger market teams would flourish. And there goes your parity. Okay.
Yeah.
But see, the Patriots, they figured out how to do this. They figured it out. And that's why the Patriots, you think in a world of parity in the NFL, the Patriots left a perfect model of how to build a dynasty within that rule structure.
You're absolutely right, Steve, and it doesn't hurt to have Bill Belichick and Tom Brady either.
That helps a little bit.
Steve, thank you. It does not. Steve, thank you so much for calling. Call back anytime.
Thank you for having me on. Love the station.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. So my argument, like, to Steve in that point, is there are two examples. Number one, the salary floor, again, it makes you spend that money. You
That's
can't
a very
have an
good point.
MLB situation like that. Mm-hmm. So you have to spend, let's say if you minimize it, let's say $150 million, you absolutely have to spend that. So you do have the teams that have the advantage, okay? And there are financial advantages from being Jacksonville to being Dallas.
Yeah.
Okay? But here's the difference. What happens in those situations is that, yeah, you have the choice to pay. Let's say you want to go out, you can pay Dak $100 million, Zeke $100 million, Cooper $100 million. Mm-hmm. Or let's say that Aaron Rodgers wants to hit the free agency market so he can go to Dallas and get the first $300 million football contract. Okay? Yeah. There are a couple things that make this an issue. Number one is that you only have so much money. Even the teams like Dallas, even the teams with that disposable income that have that, there's a certain point to where spending too much money hurts your profit margin. That hurts the amount of money that Jerry Jones is putting in his pocket and increasing his wealth at the end of the day. Because in the end, this is a business for these guys.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's why you see in Major League Baseball how much trouble it gets in. But number two, you can get hampered by contracts just as much as you can in Major League Baseball. You can get hampered in the NFL. Yeah, you can pay Aaron Rodgers that much money, but what if he gets hurt for, you know, 8 games in a season, and that turns into a full season if he has the wrong injury, and then you've got all this money sank into players where now you're starting to maximize the risks that you're taking.
Right.
And that's where it becomes a problem. Every team has to be smart. Do I really want to pay Aaron Donald, Khalil Mack, and Aaron Rodgers? Because people think Dallas is just going to go buy the best players. Well, here's another thing people have to think of. There's, in the NFL, they have a rule that if you sign a player to a contract, and this is what happened with Khalil Mack in Oakland, he wanted the highest paid defensive contract ever. And I think that it wasn't that Oakland didn't want to pay Khalil Mack. It's that they couldn't. Because even if you give a guy a $100 million contract, he wants, like, I believe Khalil Mack got about a $62 million signing bonus.
That's what they want.
And the thing is, in the NFL, you have to have every single dollar of a signing bonus in escrow, which means you have to have all of that liquid finance in the bank to pay immediately. How many owners do you think are really out there to pay 3 or 4 guys? If Jerry Jones were to decide Donald and Mack in the same offseason, you're really going to put $150 million, you're just going to lose that one fell swoop?
And you think that anytime you see those huge, giant contracts, look how they work out in baseball. They normally don't work out that well.
Right.
It just doesn't. So that's a very good point. I don't think any owners besides Jerry Jones would do that.
Or could they?
Yeah.
You know, maybe Robert Kraft could.
Maybe.
But then, you know, and that's another example of, you say the small market teams, and that's a good point, that small market teams don't have the financial capacity to compete. And I know that the Patriots are an outlier, but, you know, the Packers kind of are too. And you see these small, the Pittsburgh Steelers, it's not like that Pittsburgh is the most booming market in America, but these teams have stayed competitive, not just because the salary cap helps with parity, but they have good organizational structures.
Yeah.
And that they keep the players, they draft talented players, they develop them. Just because the salary cap goes away doesn't mean that stops. in that situation. Mm-hmm. You see that, you know, New England's still able to win, even though they have Tom Brady, Stephon Gilmore, and blank.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have a ton of superstars, and they still find a way to win. So I think the salary cap part of it is an excuse generally for the owners to not pay the exorbitant amount of contracts, but it does make it better for the players while the salary floor is still able to keep everyone competitive. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a way to have a true market. But, you know, and the last point I was going to make was like rookie deals, and there's like ways to kind of figure that out in the true market. But overall, that's my point, is that as long as you have the salary floor, I think it would be healthy for the NFL to not have a salary cap, because then it makes the contracts truly what people deserve. And then, you know, you just hope a team doesn't pay, you know, let's say Trevor Lawrence $200 million and then they pay the rest of the team in minimum guys, because then you just have a superstar with no team around them. But that'd be a fun experiment. So it seemed like you were on the salary cap side at first, but my salary floor argument kind of swayed you.
That I never really thought about the salary floor, but now that you mention that, I mean, yes, I would totally be for that.
Definitely. And that's a way for teams to always have to spend the same amount of money. And then if you are Jerry Jones and you have that, you can spend that money.
But will you?
But you better spend it wisely.
Yes. So we've still got that poll up on the Jimmy and Angelo Twitter page, at Jimmy and Angelo. It's 50-50 right now. So go on there, voice your opinion, at Jimmy and Angelo. And next, we are going to be talking fantasy football. And if you would like to be a part of the first ever Jimmy and Angelo Fantasy League, we got news for you.
It's going to be hashtag LitFam.
Hashtag LitFam. That's next on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Jimmy and Angelo back with you.
Give us a call, 381-1313. And you'll hear on a lot of shows, they'll say, you know, what we talk about during the break sometimes is better than what we talk about in the air. So we're just gonna continue the NFL salary cap conversation, because Jimmy and I were just kind of just spitballing about it. And one of my points is that in the NFL, it's a sport where even if you have stars, you have to win, or else it's not... It's not going to matter. You're not going to bring in the revenue and the tickets, because if you notice, the Super Bowl champion is what births fans. Like Seahawks fans, there weren't any before 2013.
The 12 didn't exist.
No, it did not. And now it's a huge thing. And in the NBA, it takes a lot, like the Warriors, to go on that dynasty streak like they did. But if you have, like in Charlotte, a Kemba Walker, you might not never make the playoffs, but people come see Kemba Walker play.
Yeah.
And that's just something that people always come to see Kemba play. Or if another example would be a guy like DeMar DeRozan in Toronto for a little while, even though they were winners, but like Dwight Howard in Orlando. Like if you have that single star in the NBA, they'll still come and see him.
Yeah, and they would get like prime time games because of that one star, even if the team wasn't good.
Right, but in the NFL, not so much. No. If the Packers had Aaron Rodgers and Khalil Mack and they went 6-10 every year, nobody's going to care. So it's a point to where it's not just a team that can load up on star players and then just say, you know, the people will come see us play and whatnot. It's much more important than the NFL to consistently create a winner and a bedrock of that organization to keep people. That's why the Patriots went from an irrelevant franchise, a truly irrelevant franchise, to being... to being the second most valuable franchise in all of NFL behind Dallas.
Yeah, and well, I think it's like that in the NFL, because in basketball, you have five players on the team, on the court. Normally, that one guy is one who's always touching the ball. Football, you've got 22 different guys, even more when you count special teams. So it's having one guy or maybe two guys. If you're not winning, no one's going to come watch you, because no one wants to see Odell Beckham out there when he's not getting the ball thrown to him. It's just not fun. You don't have that same excitement where it's like, we want to watch that one guy.
And that's the thing with the Major League Baseball, is that you can kind of do that, but then overall it's about winning as well. You can still spend that top dollar, but it's not changing the way that your income. Now, if you draft a guy like Mike Trout and he's consistently the best player in the world, I'm sure there are many more people going to Angels games because of that or when he comes into the town. But you look at the Reds, when they're, you know, it's they don't have a star necessarily right now. And their attendance still can be, you know, it fluctuates a little bit, but the better they are, the more people come. And it's more of just of a local situation where in some sports, if you don't have a star, they won't come.
Exactly.
And that's more of the NBA. If you don't have a star, they will not come to the games.
Yeah.
But in all of sports, it's just creating a winner. So a lot of people think that that same point that Steve made, without the parity, the Dallas Cowboys are going to run the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not the case. If it was up to them, if there's no salary cap, you're seeing Dak, Zeke, and Amari get paid, and Byron Jones, well, that's $300 million, like right there over the length of those contracts and a lot up front that I'm not sure that that makes them a Super Bowl contender if they keep those guys. They had the same guys on the team last year, and they couldn't make it out of the second round.
No, and I don't think giving those guys more money is going to make them more hungry.
Their team better. No. It's not going to make their team better. So you could see that, yes, there is a point that, you know, and I could see maybe Aaron Rodgers being like, I'm not going to sign a new contract because I'm going to go Dallas and get the most money or whatever. Like, those situations can't arise where it hurts the smaller market teams.
It could happen.
But at the same time, what's the likelihood? How does this go? It's really interesting. But that's kind of the point I wanted to make. But on to, forget real football. Forget real football stuff.
Stupid.
We got something else to talk about.
Yeah, it's Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio 1392.5. And this year we have the first ever Jimmy and Angelo Fantasy Football League. And if you would like to be a part of it, go to our Twitter, at Jimmy and Angelo, and retweet the tweet that we posted a video on Thursday last week, I believe, about our fantasy football extravaganza.
We need to make it sound extravaganza.
No, I'll just do it like that every time.
Okay, I like it.
Ganza. It's going to be next week from 10 to 11. We're going to do the normal show from 9 to 11, but starting at 10 o'clock is going to be all fantasy football. Yep. And if you would like to be a part of our team, or the league, I should say, let us know. Retweet it. Slide into our DMs at Jimmy and Angelo and just say, hey, I love fantasy football. Love you guys. I want to be a part of the league.
Yep.
And
give us a call right now if you want to be a part
sure.
of it. And we'll try to get you on. How many people do we have in the league so far?
I believe we have seven.
I've already signed up.
Yes.
I'm already signed in. We want to have the draft Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Next Sunday.
Next Sunday after the football fantasy extravaganza. We'll create a time. We're going to try to get everybody looped together, get us in a group chat, and have this fantasy football league work. We've got people from our office, you know, water cooler talk, how good that is. We're talking about, did you see Jimmy drop that guy last week?
Can't believe he dropped Pat Mahomes.
Game. Yeah.
And then he was smart.
Talk about that trade, like where people start grumbling, like, Jim down in Cubicle 7, he traded Todd Gurley for a player to be named later after Todd Gurley had three straight 40-point weeks. It's like we might have to kick him out of the league.
Such a gym move. But we just want to open it up to you that listen to us every Sunday. And if you want to be a part of it, it'll just kind of like develop the relationship more.
Yep. We think we're going to have four spots for people. We've already have two filled.
Yeah. So if you want to be a part of it, just let us know. It's going to be a 12-team league, pretty standard stuff. We're going to do the PPR scoring. So, again, the draft will be sometime on Sunday next week. But, again, once we get everyone into the league, we figure out timing-wise and everything what will work. We want to do that. So, again, follow us on Twitter, at Jimmy and Angelo, and retweet us, and we will send you the invite. And next Sunday will be the Fantasy Football Extravaganza show.
Speaking of our Fantasy Football League,
okay,
one of the members is on the line with us, and just when we thought we finally got rid of him.
Oh, no.
He's finally gone.
Oh, no.
We got Trey. Trey, what's up?
Angel, I appreciate the introduction.
You're welcome.
It was really, really nice of you.
This is definitely for you. What do you want to talk about, Trey?
There's so much I want to talk about.
Do you want to talk about what you did last night?
Oh.
Yes.
No, I thought that was going to be a hard no.
No, I bonded with my teammates. It was a great time.
Bonded with teammates. Great time. Nighty came back from home to go back to college. I wonder what great times they had. I'm sure they just played board games. So.
Well, yeah, Yahtzee's huge.
It's
in
huge with the lacrosse
right
college scene.
Yeah.
Yes, especially Canadians.
So we already. We already kind of dissed your Pirates earlier. They're the second worst team in the NL. There's no way they're going to make the playoffs. Is there anything that you want to try to stick up for them?
Vasquez, great pitcher. You know, he'll be carrying us for the next like 10 years.
Do you have any advice for Josh Bell defensively?
Go to the AL.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Maybe he will go to the Yankees after all. You never know.
That's true. What? He probably will.
So did you? We were talking today. We talked about the NBA Select Team. We talked about our top 10 college football players for 2019. We've talked about the NFL salary cap. Do any of those spark your imagination?
No, I just wanted to call and talk a little trash about your guys' upcoming fantasy draft, because you guys shouldn't even draft, because I'm just going to dominate. It's not
going to
be fair.
Okay, wow, that was intense trash talk.
Here's Trey's draft strategy. First round, James Conner. Second round, Juju Smith-Schuster. Third round, Ben Roethlisberger. Fourth round, Vance McDonald. Fifth round, Pittsburgh defense. I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be okay in this league with your draft strategy. So,
what are you talking about? My team's going to be amazing. You guys are going to you guys are going to be shocked about the news, I think.
We're going to be shocked, huh? We're going to be shocked. Well, I can't wait to see it, Trey. I'm sure that any team, he's going to pick nobody from the AFC North against Pittsburgh.
Definitely.
Any rival with Pittsburgh. No player that's ever played on Pittsburgh and left. So, I mean, like, he has a very slim pickings of, like, exactly what he wants once you get past, like, the third round.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that'll go straight for – by the way, Trey, since we're going to be giving away all of our fantasy football secrets because we're brave enough to come on the air, give them away, and then draft against our competition.
Mm-hmm.
What strategies of yours do you want to give away?
A kicker in the first round.
Good call.
Trey, we'll talk to you later, man. Thanks so much for coming on with your insight.
No problem.
All right, see you, man.
See you guys.
One of the best trash talkers in the biz. I'll give it to him. That was great.
Reginald the Third.
Yeah.
Or Regis. No, it's not Regis. It's Regis.
Regis.
That's what
third.
It is.
Regis the Third. So, again, if you want to be a part of the Jimmy and Angelo Fantasy Football League, just let us know. Slide into our DMs at Jimmy and Angelo, or you can call us 3-1-13-13. We just want to have fun this fantasy football season, and if we can have you be a part of it with us, I think it would just make it all the better, and we can get into, you know, trash talk, whatever. We're just a family here. We want you to be a part of it.
Would you say it'd be hashtag lit?
It would be hashtag lit fam.
No doubt.
The most lit. When we come back, we've got a what to watch for. Angelo's got a super fun time Sunday in store for him today. When we come back, it's Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Could keep my hands on myself. It's ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Jimmy and Angelo here with you. Make sure you are following us on Twitter at Jimmy and Angelo. Our phone number is 3-1-13-13. We come at you every Sunday from 9 till 11.
Next Sunday, we're going to be on a regular show from 9 to 10, 10 to 11. We're going to have our fantasy football extravaganza.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a call, 3-1-13-13 if you want in, or tweet us. You have to retweet our fantasy football tweet and also give us a follow to be a part of the league. We got two more slots open. But
yep.
With heavy hearts, we want to send out the news that, according to multiple sources, Cedric Benson has died.
Mm-hmm.
Former Cincinnati Bengals, Green Bay Packers, Chicago Bear running back, former Texas running back. He has passed away. He apparently, it's reported as a motorcycle accident that it happened. And it's tough to hear when you see guys that you kind of grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
Cedric Benson was drafted in 2005. I was 13 or 12, actually 12 at the time.
Yeah.
And I was really into the NFL draft. Like that is my passion,
mm-hmm.
is the NFL draft. And he was my first. Everybody has like their draft crush for the year in NFL draft, where you always have that one guy that you just really like.
Yeah.
And me being naive and young and wanting to just be a part of it, you know, he looked kind of like Ricky Williams in the Texas jersey and the short dreads, and he was so good. And I was just enamored with Cedric Benson. I thought he was going to be amazing. And he first got to my Packer, me being a Packers fan, to the enemy Bears.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a double agent because he didn't work out there. And he ended up playing for my favorite team in the Green Bay Packers and the team that is closest to me in the Cincinnati Bengals. So I got to kind of be a part of his career, you know, in a very tangential way of getting to see him play. And, you know, he had some spurts here and there that, you know, off the field that were, you know, you worried about him as a person. And then he kind of seemed to overcome it and was able to have a long career in the NFL at a position that typically isn't very long. So it's really... It's, you know, it's sad to see people that go, you know, too soon. Mm-hmm. And so rest in peace to Cedric Benson. And, you know, hopefully his, you know, family's doing all right. But I'm guessing, you know, they won't be for a while.
That's tough. He was 36, which is crazy. It's so young.
It is. I mean, 36, you know, in the NFL, guys are gone by that time. But in life, you're just not beginning even, true adulthood.
Yeah, you're not even getting to your prime adult years at 36.
Yeah.
So definitely sending thoughts and prayers out to his family. So this is pretty much wrapping up the end of our show today. And Angelo, what do you have going on the rest of today?
Well, what to watch for for the week is I'm going to the Reds game today. And I typically don't go to – I pretty much go to one Reds game a year, and it's usually with my papaw. We go to the Cardinals Reds game. I always try to get them tickets for that for one of the games of the series, and I always choose apparently in the hottest day of August. I remember last year I got sunburn just being out there, and on top of that, it is going to be a very, very heavy heat.
I think today might be the hottest day of the year so far, actually.
Excellent.
At least here.
Excellent.
So it's gonna be 95, probably.
Good chooser of day games, because 1:10 on a Sunday, why not just cook a little bit?
Yeah, and but, just sit on the field where you're. Your legs are going to get burned by the seats.
Oh, it did. Good stuff. I got burned. It's just weird. So I'll tell you what. Baseball sunburns are always the weirdest and most interesting, because it's always just like some spot where it's just like a little 2x2 spot on your leg, and it's just seared, and the rest of you is normal. And it's like, I came for a tan, and I left with just looking deformed. You know, it's really fun. Baseball games are always fun. It's a good family bonding experience, too, because you have the trip there and back. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if you go on a date and you're still kind of, you know, like nervous, you take them to a game, more of like your element, you know, get to know them better. It's like...
You can like point at the scoreboard and be like, you know what that stat means? I know what war means. It's a win above replacement.
You're lucky that your girlfriend agreed to be your fiance, because I don't know if you could go back out in the dating world.
No,
world
probably
with that.
Not. No. I don't even know why she still stays with me now, or I say things. And she just doesn't... I just don't get responses anymore. Or she just looks at me and I just didn't even have to roll her eyes. I'm just like, I'll shut up.
Yeah, right, yeah. Totally. Yeah, I mean, she stays with you because you're Jimmy Radio, baby.
Obviously. World renowned.
So baseball games to me are just, I mean, they are fun because of everything that's kind of around the game.
That's like really what it is.
It really, like you've got the potlucks where you pay money and like at the end someone wins all of the money in the pot. Mm-hmm. And you've got hot dogs. I like going to games out of the area, and I try to find the concession stand that has like the most hometown food that they have.
Yeah.
Like I went to Indianapolis for a Pacers game, and the most hometown Indianapolis thing was like Korean barbecue or something. And I was just like, I don't think that's what I was looking for in fine Indianapolis cuisine. I didn't think Korean barbecue to go off with, you know. But Cincinnati, that's a great place to get, like, you have to get, if you're an outsider, like the chili cheese dog, like the conies. Yeah. They call them conies and stuff. You know, to me, they're chili cheese dogs. Yeah. But, you know, it's a way of life.
Yeah.
You know, they put that stuff on spaghetti and hot dogs. That's all they eat.
Yeah.
All right. But it's cool. You know, I've tried that out. It is very good.
Baseball stadiums, though, is the best place if you want to, like, if you're a foodie, because each stadium kind of has their thing.
So what's your drink stratus? Do you go water? Do you go soda? Do you go beer, or do you get like a lot of beer? Like, what's your plan whenever you go to a baseball game? Let's say you're not driving. You're just going.
I go
like,
straight beer.
Straight
definitely
beer.
Definitely am not going to do any kind of liquor, because I went to a Reds game and someone I was with got a double Tito's and Coke. I believe it was $19. Not a joke. So I ain't trying to do all that.
Wow.
Not kidding.
Wow.
Yes, that's real. So I usually just go straight beer. No soda. Beer, water. Maybe if it's really high like today, like maybe a lemonade.
A lemonade?
Nice. Like one of the fresh squeezed lemonades.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, so. And I'm thinking to myself, like, dollar beer nights at the Legends game. Mm. Do you make it to the seventh inning stretch, or...
Oh, well,
do
I'm,
they send you on a seventh inning stretcher was, out of there?
Yeah, I'm stretching, but it's for the dollar beer night, you definitely have to partake in a lot of the dollar beers. Just come there with a 20.
But yeah, that's what to watch for this week. Obviously, NFL preseason. We forgot to hit on NFL preseason.
Well, it's going into the week three of the preseason, which is where it starts to get interesting. The first 2 weeks, you kind of watch a little bit. Just make sure there's no injuries. But weeks three and four is when you can really start to look for, if you're on fantasy.
I guess we can start talking about NFL preseason next week as we get into our fantasy football extravaganza. The show is from 9 to 11, the fantasy football extravaganza, 10 to 11. Tune in, get all the fantasy football advice that you need, and call in with your questions. If you're debating between a couple of players, if you're wanting to know like who we think the breakout player is, mm-hmm. so you can draft them around 14, 15, 16 and have that X factor going into the year, absolutely call us up.
Absolutely. That is next week from 9 to 11. It's Jimmy and Angelo on ESPN Sports Radio, 1300 and 92.5.